Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is December 6th, 2018, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is The Epi Don't Work for Out-of-Hospital Cardiac Arrests. And our guest skeptics is Jay Loosely. He is the Superintendent of Education at Middlesex London Paramedic Service, and Jen Doyle. She's a paramedic educator at Middlesex London Paramedic Service. Welcome back to the SGM, Jay.
Thanks, Ken. Good to be here.
Oh, it's always great to visit the headquarters. And Jen, great to see you again, but I understand you're not a skater.
I'm most definitely not a skater.
We were talking earlier about getting out on an outdoor rink and going for a skate because it's snowing today, but that's not one of your favorite things.
No, it's not going to happen.
What do you like to do in the winter, Jen?
I'm more of the skiing type.
Oh, okay. Yes. Now we're talking skiing, not snowboarding?
Skiing.
Oh, you could see your face right now, SGMers. Oh, it's skiing. It's not snowboarding. Well, we're not going to banter a lot because we've all got a busy day ahead. So, Jay, give us a case.
Perfect. Here we go. A 51-year-old male experiences a cardiac arrest on the street. Your first provider on scene with EMS, and you start high-quality CPR. A defib is hooked up, and the patient is in VFib, or ventricular fibrillation. He is unsuccessfully shocked, meaning he was shocked, but nothing changed. An oral airway was placed, an IV is started, and the paramedic asks his partner, should I give some IV epinephrine?
Well, as you know, Jay, the American Heart Association has how many steps?
Five.
That's right. I don't know how they knew my favorite number, but five steps in the chain of survival for out-of-hospital cardiac arrests.
Step one, recognition and activation of 911. Step two, immediate high-quality CPR. Step three, rapid defibrillation. Step four, basic and advanced paramedics. And step five, ACLS and post-arrest care.
We're going to focus on step four. That focuses on the rapid access to advanced cardiac life support skills, such as intubation or intravenous drug therapy.
You know, this step is somewhat controversial, and we've covered it before on the SGEM with that classic OPALS trial by the legend of emergency medicine, Dr. Ian Steele. This was a before and after study to see if advanced cardiac life support techniques, including IV epinephrine, would improve survival to discharge.
Well, there was an improvement in return of spontaneous circulation, or ROSC, and survival to hospital admission. There was not an increased survival to hospital discharge. There was also no increase in survivors with good neurological outcomes with ACLS.
But there have been a number of papers published since OPALS to support the findings of not using ACLS drugs like epinephrine for OCA.
And did you see, Jay, I gave her all the hard last names to read there?
I saw it.
And Jen avoided reading all those names. We'll put those in the show notes for people. But we've reviewed Cogne et al. And it was a cohort study as part of the SGEM HOP series with AEM, or Academic Emergency Medicine. And it demonstrated better ROSC with ACLS, but not better survival to hospital discharge.
Well, that was on the SGEM number 189. But a limitation of these studies is their observational nature. There is one randomized control trial on epi for out-of-hospital cardiac arrest by Jacobs et al., published in Resuscitation 2011. This Australian trial showed better ROSC with epinephrine, but not better survival to hospital discharge in 534 patients.
Unfortunately, the trial failed to achieve their sample size for a variety of reasons, which left it underpowered. This means that there's a lack of high-quality data to rely upon in deciding whether or not to use epinephrine in out-of-hospital cardiac arrest situations.
So what's the clinical question we're going to discuss today?
The question is, does the use of epinephrine in cardiac arrest improve survival rates with a favorable neurological outcome?
And the reference?
Perkins et al., a randomized trial of epinephrine in out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, New England Journal of Medicine, 2018.
Let's run through the PICO. What was their population?
So we had adult patients with OCA that ACLS was started by the paramedics.
And they had a few exclusions: pregnancy, age less than 16, cardiac arrest due to anaphylaxis or asthma, so we want to be able to give epi in those patients, or the administration of epi before the arrival of paramedics. What was the intervention?
So the intervention was epinephrine 1 milligram IV every 3 to 5 minutes.
And what did they compare it to?
They compared it to a placebo, 0.9% saline, IV, also every 3 to 5 minutes.
Let's run through the outcomes. What was their primary outcome they were focused upon?
So they were primarily focused on the survival at 30 days.
And secondary outcomes?
They had numerous secondary outcomes. They had survival to hospital admission, length of stay in the hospital and in the intensive care unit, survival at hospital discharge and at 3 months, as well as neurological outcomes at hospital discharge and also at 3 months.
So the author's conclusions were, quote, in adults with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, the use of epinephrine resulted in a significant higher rate of 30-day survival than the use of placebo. But there was no significant between-group differences in the rate of a favorable neurologic outcome because more survivors had severe neurologic impairment in the epinephrine group, end of quote. All right, we've got 11 questions to go through for randomized control trials. Question 1. The study population included or focused on those in the emergency department?
No, the patients in this study were out-of-hospital cardiac arrest patients.
2. The patients were adequately randomized?
Yes. A randomization sequence was computer-generated by the minimization method with an overall assignment ratio of 1 to 1. For those who might have wondered, the minimization method is a fancy term for eliminating the imbalance between the number of patients in each treatment group over a number of factors.
Jen, he is starting to sound really nerdy.
Wow, that's a big word, minimization.
He's very smart.
3. The randomization process was concealed.
Yes, it was. The Warwick Clinical Trials Unit provided randomization with concealed assignment.
The patients were analyzed in the groups to which they were randomized.
Yes, they performed a modified intention to treat analysis without adjustment for the outcome.
The 5th question, the study patients, were they recruited consecutively?
Yes, we believe they were recruited consecutively, although they do not specifically state this in the publication.
The patients in both groups, were they similar with respect to prognostic factors?
Yes.
Were all participants unaware of group allocation?
Yes.
Did they treat all groups equally except for the intervention?
Yes.
Was their follow-up complete, Jay?
Yes, there was.
Did they consider all patient important outcomes?
Yes, they did.
And the treatment effect, was it large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant?
We're unsure about this one.
Okay, so let's go through the key results. They had just over 8,000 patients included in the analysis. The mean age was around 70 years, with almost two-thirds being male and two-thirds witnessed arrests. CPR was performed in 70%. That's a pretty impressive number, isn't it?
Well, 70%? That's not bad.
Of the cases, and less than 1 in 5 had a shockable initial cardiac rhythm. So what was the key result?
30-day survival was statistically higher in the epinephrine group compared to the placebo.
All right, let's dig into that. Let's unpack that a bit. That primary outcome, survival at 30 days, was?
3.2% in the epinephrine group and 2.4% in the placebo group.
So the unadjusted odds ratio was 1.39, which was statistically significant.
Yes, Ken, but the adjusted odds ratio was up to 1.47.
So that gave you a number needed to treat of 112. So you'd have to treat 112 out-of-hospital cardiac arrest adult patients with epinephrine to have one more survive at 30 days.
With a fragility index of 6.
Yeah, so 6. So 6 patients had to switch teams from a non-event to an event or an event to a non-event in either group. So if 6 swap teams, then no longer would you have statistical significance. That's the fragility index. But I'll put a link in that for what the fragility index is and how to calculate that. How about the secondary outcomes?
So there was a greater survival to hospital admission, survival to hospital discharge, and survival at 3 months in the epinephrine group. There was no difference in good neurological outcome at discharge or at 3 months. And there was severe neurological impairment, which was defined as a modified ranking score of 4 or 5, which we'll discuss later, was more common among the survivors in the epinephrine groups compared to the placebo group.
Yeah, and so I'll put a table in the show notes that summarizes all those secondary outcomes. But it's time to get to my favorite part. It's time to talk nerdy to me. And this paramedic 2 trial has been covered by many other FOMED providers. So we're just going to mention 5 things and then list the other critical appraisals in the show notes. So what's the first of the 5 things we wanted to talk about?
Number 1, survival rate at 30 days. Survival was fairly low in this trial at about 3%. This could have been because of selection bias. those patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest who got ROSC, 615, or EPI, 1,192, administered before paramedics arrived were excluded from the study.
Yeah, so if you had ROSC before they got there, you weren't in the study. So the actual overall survival rate wasn't 3%. It was more if you looked at the entire group, but then you get into some selection. So you're trying to select out those people that didn't have ROSC in this case, or they also excluded those who had already received epinephrine. But I think that's an important point. So when people look at the trial and they go, oh, wow, 3%, that's abysmal, isn't it? You know, hopefully the statistics here in your area, is it a little bit better than that? I hope it's a little bit better than
3%. It sure is.
Oh, good. Okay. That was just a big fat pitch across the plate for you to hit out of the park there, Jay. But yeah, no, so don't be alarmed. I don't think we should be alarmed by going, oh, 3%. It actually, overall survival was much higher. It's just they selected out for that. What's the second point?
The second point was the time that epinephrine was administered. The median time to administration of epinephrine did not occur until 22 minutes post-arrest. So this included the 6.6 minutes response time plus the 13.8 minutes on-scene time. So the question here is, would there have been different results if epinephrine administration occurred earlier in the management of the arrest? This is unknown, and we would need to test this to see if earlier administration of epinephrine for the adult at a hospital cardiac arrest would provide a benefit.
Now, looking at those times, 6.6 minutes, is that pretty good response time for
I'd
you guys?
I'd say so.
Yeah, okay. And how about that on-scene time of about 13 or 14 minutes?
Prior to administration of epi? That's not bad.
That's not bad.
I think we're probably a little faster here.
Well, you're in the field. I'm not in the field. So I just, mm-hmm. I felt that 6 minutes was pretty good response time from what I've read in the literature. I just didn't know about the scene time. Okay, what about the third point?
The amount of epinephrine. Paramedics administered 1 milligram epi bolus every 3 to 5 minutes, which is the standard directive. Would different results be seen if epi was administered in a different dose or dosing intervals, such as high dose versus low dose or an infusion versus bolus? Again, this is an interesting question that would need to be studied.
Yeah, so it's hypothesis generating. So you have further hypotheses. So all we can do is comment on the data we have, but that doesn't mean that epinephrine couldn't possibly work. But before we say that it does work, we would actually need to do the study on an infusion versus a bolus or different dosage range. I'm skeptical that that would make a difference, but I can't say it won't. But the burden of proof is on those making the claim. How about the fourth thing?
So the fourth one is the modified Rankin score, or MRS score. Some of the problems with the MRS score has been discussed before on the SGEM. Over 10 years ago, Wilson et al. Did a study which demonstrated substantial inter-rater reliability. In addition, they used an MRS score of 0 to 3 as being a favorable neurological outcome. Perhaps patients would consider a different number to be good, for example, just 0 or 0 to 1.
Oh, I'd take a 0, no neurologic deficit.
I would as well.
I think that would be the best outcome. And you know, if I had to pick between a 5 and a 6, I actually think 6 for some people might be better. That's dead, as opposed to be severely neurologically impaired, a 5. But yeah, no, I'll take a 0. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. So if we just consider 0 to 2, for example, as opposed to 0 to 3, then the results would shift slightly. We would see about 1.3% for the epinephrine group versus 1.35 for the control group.
Yeah, I didn't run the extra stats on that to see if 1.3 versus 1.35 five are different, but I suspect they're not. All right, how about the fifth point?
Evidence-based medicine, or EBM. The definition of EBM includes literature, clinicians, and patients. The literature informs our care, but should not dictate our care. Clinical judgment must also be used when deciding upon management. Patient values also need to be considered. This trial demonstrated increased ROSC, survival to hospital admission, ICU admission, survival to hospital discharge, 30 days, and at 3 months. However, there was no improvement in favorable neurologic outcome with a significant increase in survivors with severe impairment at hospital discharge, almost double in the epinephrine group, and at 3 months, again more in the epi group. When evaluating any therapy, we must always consider the harm. Increasing survival of severely damaged patients after out-of-hospital cardiac arrest cannot be viewed as a successful intervention.
Yeah, I have to agree with you there. I think this is one of the key points of the study, is that if we're getting more ROSC and we're getting more survival to hospital and stuff like that, but we're not saving more people with good neurologic outcomes, and in fact, we're increasing the number of patients with bad neurologic outcomes, I don't think that's a win.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, well, let's comment on the author's conclusions and compare them to the SGEM's conclusions.
Well, we agree with the author's conclusions.
Jen, you're so agreeable.
I know.
All right, well, give us a bottom line then.
So the bottom line, in adults who have suffered an out-of-hospital cardiac arrest, the use of epinephrine to improve survival with favorable neurological outcomes is not supported by the literature, and protocols should be changed to reflect the data.
And how about a case resolution, Jay?
The patient is loaded into the ambulance with high-quality, high-performance CPR being provided, and epinephrine is given automatically as part of the existing protocol. The patient has ROSC and survives to hospital admission, but dies soon after in the ICU.
All right, so how are we going to take this information and clinically apply it?
Resuscitation efforts should focus on things that have been demonstrated to improve patient-oriented outcomes, like high-quality, high-performance CPR and early defibrillation. In contrast, epinephrine should not be routinely given to adult patients with out-of-hospital cardiac arrest.
So what are you going to tell the patient?
You mean while I'm yelling at them to not go to the light? Nothing. They're in cardiac arrest, Ken.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Agreed. I guess that question is always in there to talk about how we take this, this detailed information, scientific information, the literature, and how do we actually translate it into English in our case and not just talk medical. Well, that sound means it's time for the Keener contest, and last week's winner was Cregan Eddy from Springbok, South Africa. They knew that according to Statistics Canada 2016 report, 26% or just over a quarter of victims of human trafficking were less than 18 years of age. You got a question for us, Jen?
I do. So there has been debate over the years on whether it should be called epinephrine or adrenaline. And words matter, you know. So, name the researcher who was working in the Wellcome Physiological Research Laboratories in 1906 that insisted on using the name adrenaline in all his, hint, publications.
Oh, you're giving them a hint. Mm-hmm. Okay, so if you know the answer to this question between epinephrine and adrenaline, then send me an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in that subject line, the first correct answer will receive a cool skeptical prize. Now, I did mention there are many other FOMED resources on the Paramedic 2 trial, and so I will list those in the show notes, but I want to thank our guests here, our guest skeptics, for doing another show with me. Jay, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for having us.
And I do like this new headquarters. How new is it now?
We've been here a year.
A year, yeah. It is beautiful. It is a beautiful setup, and I actually took a quick glance over. You've got a great education room, too, for training the paramedics with this little sim lab at the back of the ambulance kind of thing. Very cool. And Jen, I don't know, maybe you're going to have to learn how to skate.
Maybe.
All right. Well, you know, the next time we get together, it's going to be the spring. We're in December right now, but we're going to get together in the spring for Talk Trauma.
Great, and we can't wait to see you there at Talk Trauma 2019 in London, Ontario.
Oh, yeah. Talk Trauma 2019, London, Ontario. I'm going to be doing a live broadcast with the amazing Allison Armstrong. But until then, who's given the tagline? Are you doing it together?
I feel like we should do it together.
Oh, let's do it together.
Because it is a paramedic 2 trial. I think we should have two paramedics.
I love it.
Doing the tagline. So do you want me to count you in?
You count us
okay,
in.
Okay, here we go. One, two, three.
Remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next time. Now the drugs don't work.